Oi, you know what time it is? You're tuned in listening to Draw That Aussie Metal Guy. Make sure to hit that like and subscribe button so you don't miss any of his content when it drops. And remember, stay brutal, you mad dogs. Roof.
Hey, how you all going? It's Jai, that Aussie Metal Guy here with Crank.com and with Cranium Radio. So today, tonight, wherever you are in the world or this morning, it's a great pleasure that I'm having a chat with UK folk punk legend Frank Turner, who's due to release his 10th studio album, Undefeated, May 3rd through Extra Mile Recordings. Frank, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for your time. It's nice to chat to you. How are you?
I'm good, man. Absolute pleasure to get to chat to you about this album. This is an absolutely ripping album. I'd heard of your music before, but this was really, really good to kind of dive into this album and a hell of a lot of your back catalog, but mainly this album. This was a really, really thoughtful, insightful album, and one I just totally connected with on the first listen. I've been playing it over and over again on the stream I sent as well. I think it's mainly in part to being in my 40s, and I kind of got a lot of what you were saying.
Sure, absolutely. I mean, it's, you know, it's not a concept record, but I mean, one of the themes is kind of getting older. You know, I'm 42 these days. It's a terrible shame. I still consider myself a punk at the center of it all. But like, you know, I can't really write songs like Teenage Kicks at this point in my life. Do you know what I mean? That would be dishonest, should we say. So there's an attempt to kind of say something meaningful about trying to maintain this this approach to life as your back starts hurting.
Exactly, and that kind of comes back to never mind the back problems, and kind of, as yes, you were saying, right, you have some of these real different influences in from your career as well. You have these punky numbers and kind of these Americana folk tracks as well, and just these really, really hard-hitting lyrics in some of these tracks as well that kind of hit home and kind of have you thinking, like the latest one, Letters. Tell us about that one.
That's a song. It's about a pen friend I had when I was a kid. I was on a camping holiday when I was a kid, and I'm going to tell you a terrible truth. I was wearing a corn hoodie, if you can imagine such a thing. I would have been about 13, 14 maybe, and there was a girl on the same campsite who was wearing a Pennywise hoodie, and she came over and was like contemptuous of my corn hoodie, and we became friends, and then we became pen friends, and weirdly enough, I never saw her again after that first sort of week or whatever we hung out. But she sent me tapes of like Dead Kennedys and Black Flag and you know, Minor Threat, but also Operation Ivy and Rancid, and basically she was a huge education for me. And it was this really important relationship in my life that was almost entirely paper-based. And you know, I was going through a box of old stuff not that long ago and came across a bunch of the letters that we were writing to each other, and it just sort of first of all, it was nice to see that, like, I was a punk when I was a kid, but also, you know, to just sort of how vital that relationship was. And I mean, you know, people don't tend to write handwritten letters as much these days, for good reason. I mean, email's a lot easier.
Yeah, well, some people are probably like watching this going, what's a letter? Well, it's a text message, yeah, you put on a piece of paper, and send off to people, and they'd get it maybe in a week, and then you'd wait for a letter back, and you'd always be excited as a kid to get this letter. And then mixtapes, that was always something of our generation, we'd hand back and forth to each other, and that was something absolutely. I was always big on, like, being in a country area going, here, check this out. And
right, you know, I did a lot of tape trading when I was a kid. I actually did VHS trading for a while as well, all of which has been ruined by YouTube, because all of the obscure stuff I had is now on YouTube, so whatever. But yeah, so it's, you know, it's just a song about kind of remembering those kind of pivotal moments and that form of communication.
Yeah, and I did mention, like, kind of, you've been in the career for like coming up on 20 years, and a track I wasn't going to bring up right now, but I figured I would, Show People, man. Tell me about that one, dude, because that's a really, really kind of cool track, and I think it kind of ties in a little bit to the next thing about coming up on 3,000 or whatever shows you've been playing, sure. Dude.
Yeah, I mean, show people. I'm not supposed to have favorites on an album. You know, it's like picking your own favorite child. You're not really supposed to do it, but nevertheless, I love Show People a lot. It's a song. I was on tour. There's a band called Truck Stop Honeymoon, who are a two-piece country band from New Orleans, but they now live in Wales, and I'm not entirely sure why. But anyway, I had them out on tour with me in the UK at the start of last year, and they're just, you know, Mike the singer and his wife Katie. They've been on tour since I think before I was born, and they're still going now. And I was watching them side stage, and you know, there's something quite vaudevillian about what they do that's quite old-fashioned in a way. I mean, they're absolutely brilliant, and everyone should check them out. But I was just kind of watching them, and that's the word that came to mind. It was like, these are show people. And it's such a source of pride to me as I go through my life, you know, in terms of like my identity and my sense of community and all that kind of thing. It's not based in a place, it's based in a profession. And to give an example of this, the other day I was in I was in Bogota Airport in Colombia, if you can believe that. And I was in the immigration queue, and there was a guy in front of me in the queue, and he was wearing like Converse, black jeans, a black hoodie. He had a lanyard and like a carabiner on his belt. He had molded earplugs going in. He had certain types of tattoos. And I was just like, that's a tour person. Do you know what I mean? I don't know who this guy is. I don't know who he's working for, but that guy is a crew person on a tour, and therefore, and like, and we're kin. Do you know what I mean? Like, immediately. And just, you know, that broader sense of just a sense of belonging to like this idea of a kind of an international touring community. And like, there are skills that we have, do you know what I mean? And it says in the song, making pillows out of your shoes and fixing stuff with duct tape. And there's a line about using a guitar string for a fuse, which is actually a true story. We were about to go on stage in a festival in America one time, and my keyboard player's keyboard wasn't working, and my stage manager got a bit of a guitar string, ran on stage and jammed it into the fuse with his finger and held it there for the entire first song, and it worked. You know, and like, so, you know, it's a celebration of that kind of community of people.
Yeah, and you play so many shows as well. How do you retain that motivation and that drive to keep playing? And I know it's probably you answer the question first, and I'll jump in.
Well, I mean, I feel lucky. Do you know what I mean? First of all, that's all I really wanted to do when I was a kid was travel and play shows, and that's what I do now. And it's so I'm aware of how privileged it is to like essentially be living your teenage dream. Also, like when I was a kid, when I was starting out as a musician, there were so many great songwriters that I knew, and for whatever reason, luck or whatever, didn't go their way, and they don't play music for a living anymore. And I sort of feel like I have to enjoy it on their behalf as well. Do you know what I mean? It's like my friend Adam's the best songwriter I know, and he doesn't play music anymore because it didn't work out for him. And like, you know, I don't mean to sound patronizing towards him in any way. He's still a dear friend of mine, but like, you know, he didn't get the fortune of doing what I do. Therefore, I need to enjoy it. But and then finally, I mean, it's the one thing in life I'm reasonably confident I'm good at. Do you know what I mean? Like, I mean, one would hope after nearly 3,000 shows that I had some sort of aptitude for this. But you know, I know what I'm doing when I'm on a stage. Do you know what I mean? I feel comfortable and I love it.
And it's almost kind of like a state. How the scene is these days as a recording artist, like, unfortunately, it's our generation. We used to buy albums, and you'd know, you'd get the mixtapes, and you go buy an album, and you check out the band credits, and it was our thing. These days, it feels like artists make these unreal albums. Like, Undefeated is a fucking amazing album. Like, you make these albums, and you kind of give out your property, and you kind of hope the fans grab these copies, and you make. You got to play all these shows to make at least a living to do the next fucking album or whatever for them.
Absolutely. I mean, it's an interesting moment in the kind of, I mean, we could get into the weeds on this if we wanted to, but like, but it's, you know, like, I mean, I'm fortunate in the sense that I love touring. So like, I do it anyway. So, and then it is how I make my living. I mean, there's an argument to be made that like, the ability to kind of make a living just through selling recorded music was a weird kind of blip in the history of being a musician. If you take the centuries long view of it, do you know what I mean? In the 19th century, if you were a musician, you wanted to make a living, you had to play. And that's true. And that's true again now. And broadly speaking, so it's, I'm not overly bothered about it. It's important to say, of course, that there are bands or acts or whatever, you know, would a new Nick Drake kind of exist in this world? I mean, that's hard to say because if playing live isn't something that you're able to do or comfortable doing or whatever it might be, you know, then you are kind of screwed. So
exactly. Like, yeah. It's got its positives and negatives, and kind of this will touch on the next thing. The record labels kind of had a huge hold on the industry, whereas now as an independent artist, which you've kind of stepped away from the major labels, and I think Do One was kind of a track, if you want to mention that as well, the kind of refers to that you've kind of stepped away from these major labels because they don't have as much control as an independent artist. You can control your property. You can release your music onto these platforms.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, so I'm with a label called Extra Mile, who I've been with since day one. We licensed my stuff to a major label for a few records. Initially, we sort of did it because they offered, and it was just like, fuck it, why not? And I assumed that we'd do one, and we ended up doing five, which was completing the contract. And they wanted to do more, which, you know, and no harm, no foul. But like, I've gone back to my original setup again, which I'm very pleased about. I mean, I think broadly speaking, you know, This is broadening the conversation out a bit, but like, you know, people talk about the internet streaming, blah, 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 blah. Like, there are downsides to it, which is most of what people talk about. But everybody should remember the enormous elephant sized plus side, which is that distribution is much, much easier now. You know, when I was starting out as a kid, the idea of getting a record into a shop was like nearly impossible. Do you know what I mean? The hoops you have jumped through. Nowadays, pretty much anyone in their bedroom can get a song on Spotify. And indeed, you know, I think about the fact, like, when I was a kid, somebody told me about the Cro-Mags, and it took me 2 years to get hold of Age of Quarrel. Right. And I thought it was all right. But like, anyone listening to this can now go and find a copy of Age of Quarrel on Spotify before the end of this sentence. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And ultimately, that's a good thing, you know. And I think one of the really cool things looking at the state of music now is how kind of like genre free younger bands are, because you don't have to be kind of ghettoized in the genre anymore. You can listen to anything you want and you can put all of it in your music and who cares, you know. And I think that's got to be a better thing.
Yeah, it is. I got an email from a heavy metal band that said, we play all genres, which is great to see. And it kind of touches on, no, thank you for the music as well, about, you know, the gatekeeping. And I refuse to take part in gatekeeping people's art.
Yeah.
And that's something I've never done as well. If I don't like something, I'm not going to tear someone's vision down just because I don't get it.
You know, hearing something you don't like is liberating because, you know, because you go, cool, I don't need to pay attention to that anymore. I mean, to pick a perhaps slightly obvious example, personally, I can't stand the Red Hot Chili Peppers, but the Red Hot Chili Peppers wake up in the morning and they make Red Hot Chili Peppers fans happy. And that's a positive contribution to the world, and long may they continue to do that. But the fact that I know that I don't really care for their music means that when they put out a new record, I don't listen to it. Do you know what I mean? And maybe I'm missing out. I mean, who knows? But like, there's already way too much music. So in a funny way, identifying stuff that you don't like frees up time to find more stuff that you do like. And I just think, you know, there's not enough time in the world to spend your time hating on bands you don't like. The song No Thank You for the Music, by the way, I was at I have to tell this story. I was at an award ceremony in 2021 because I'd been nominated for an award for the live streams I did in lockdown, which were raising money for independent music venues. And I kind of knew I wasn't going to win. And but the person who did win in my category was the person who raised the most money for themselves during lockdown, who was a major label artist who shall remain nameless. And I mean, whatever, like, good luck to them all. And award ceremonies are bullshit anyway. But I just remember kind of looking around the room and just thinking, these are not my people. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't necessarily need to set fire to their houses. Do you know what I mean? But it's like, I just don't want to hang out with these people. I know which tribe I belong to, and it's not this one.
Yeah, definitely. I think we're just about there. But I'm going to ask for last word, shout outs, thank yous, or anything else you'd like to add in there, my friend.
Well, so, I mean, I've been to Australia many times in my life, and I was there. In fact, I came twice last year, and I'm not allowed to be specific at this point, but I will be back in Australia soon. We're announcing some stuff soon.
Awesome. Look forward to it. Everybody, go grab Undefeated. It does drop May 3rd via Extra Mile Recordings. It's an absolutely amazing album. I love the whole bloody thing, mate. Thank you so very much.
I really appreciate that. Thank
you. Cheers, mate.
See you in Australia.
Definitely. Cheers, mate. Thank you very much. You have a-